On today's 10 Factor Podcast, we are lucky to be joined with Megan Fenya to talk about the I Am Enough movement. Hey, it's Tim Michael. Welcome to the 10 Factor, where entrepreneurs learn how to use their expertise to build and scale a thriving business. After 12 years in corporate management and then another 10 as an entrepreneur, I got tired of living week to week, so I made a change. Obsessed with the ins and outs of a successful business, I honed my expertise, I talked to a ton of successful entrepreneurs, I designed a roadmap, I started a podcast, and I wrote a book. Put it all together, and you have the 10 Factor. Now, sit back, relax, turn on your ears, and take away some awesome value. Ready, set, go. I want to thank you for tuning in for another episode of the 10 Factor Podcast. If you're tuning in today for the first time on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, or wherever you catch your podcast episodes, it'd be awesome if you go ahead, hit that subscribe button. And while you're there, take a minute, share your thoughts with an awesome review. You can also go directly to the 10factor.com. That's THE10FACTOR.com to tune in. I'd like to help you find out exactly where your life and business stands right now. So if you take a minute while you're at the 10factor.com, go ahead and download a free copy of my 10 Factor personal assessment. It's 45 items that will, it'll be brutally honest with you. It'll tell you exactly where you are right now in life and in business. And it's a good starting point for getting your life and your business on track with where you want to go. But at least it gives you a point to say, here's where I am right now and get started. So our guest today, Megan Fenya, she's an Air Force veteran, licensed mental health therapist, and she's a speaker, trainer, host of the Blonde Bombshell podcast, founder of the I Am Enough movement, and also the host of the new I Am Enough TV. Megan is an Amazon best-selling author. Matter of fact, I have her book sitting right over here on my bookshelf. She recently published her book, You're Enough, 5 Steps to Move from Struggle to Strength. She's been featured on Sirius XM Radio, including the Jenny McCarthy Show, TV radio shows, multiple podcasts, as well as various magazines. And it's interesting because being a mental health therapist for over 15 years, as well as a transformational mindset coach, has given Megan both the personal and the professional experience to really help you level up your negative self-talk and turn it into positive self-empowerment. And if you get around Megan, you'll come to know you are enough. While enoughness feels like a miracle, it really is a proven 5-step system that Megan guides you through, which will move you from struggle to strength. So we'll talk about this in the episode, but what's different about Megan? Well, she's gone through many struggles throughout her life, which most recently was being involved in a narcissistic, abusive marriage. And for many years, she was living a life without meaning or purpose. She successfully transformed every area of her life using her own proven 5-step system and is now living a vibrant, beautiful life, a life where she truly believes she is more than enough. So it's awesome to have Megan back. We actually had her on, I guess, about a year ago, and she's been doing some amazing things. The book was getting ready to come out then. So we talked and we said, hey, let's get you back on the show and catch everybody up. And really what we want to talk about is this I Am Enough movement. So Megan, welcome back to the 10 Factor.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to catch up with you and to be back on the show.
Absolutely. So let's do this. You know, we've heard your story before. Most of my listeners, they're loyal. They probably heard you a year ago, but let's just kind of recap it. Tell them, you know, a little bit about, you know, who you are, where you came from, but, and then where you're heading.
Definitely. So I have been a mental health therapist for 15 years, and made this crazy decision to join the Air Force to commission as an officer in 2012. I was 33 years old, and I got stationed here in California at Travis Air Force Base. And it was one of the best decisions, but one of the worst decisions of my life, in a way. I was so proud to serve my country and wear the uniform, but I met my now ex-husband while I was active duty. And, you know, looking back at it, I always say, although it was like the most traumatizing time of my life, like, I'm so glad that I had that experience, because I definitely would not be where I am today. Definitely would not be on the show with you today. But long story short, we were married for 2.5 years, and he had an affair for 14 months of that 2.5 years, and filed for divorce like 4 different times. And after the divorce finally went through, I still remained faithful and committed to him for 2 years after that. So for a total of 6 years, I was in this like traumatic state of my life. And even as a mental health therapist, I didn't realize that I was in the midst of narcissistic abuse. I literally thought that I wasn't good enough. It reflected in everything I did, you know, not that I wasn't just good enough in the relationship, but that I wasn't a good friend, daughter, you know, therapist. It just kind of took over my entire world. And although on the outside, I looked like I had it all together, I was literally devastated and broken. Not just because of the affair, but all of the lies and all of the other things that happened. You'll have to read the book, the Mr. End chapter, to get all the juicy details, but your show is not long enough to go into all of that. But anyway, so jumping forward, I launched my book in August of last year, became a best-selling author. Thank you for purchasing the book, by the way.
Tim. Absolutely.
I appreciate it. And life just changed. I've been in this entrepreneurship journey only for, it'll be two years this month, September. So when the book came out, it was great. And I'm like, okay, what can I do to give back? Like, I was getting like, not bored, but just like, okay, something else has got to happen. And as a therapist, I'm a huge visual coping skill fan. So I'll just kind of say this in case you have any questions, but that is where the I Am Enough movement was born about 6 months ago. And it's just a way to give back, and we can get into details about what it all means. But it's been a crazy 6 months, and I'm just super excited to see what happens with the movement for sure.
So the thing that piques my interest is we talk about, you know, being at a point in life, and my listeners, you and I have talked about this offline as well. You know, my listeners, a lot of them are going through the same struggles. Maybe they're not in a really, really abusive relationship. Maybe they're going through a period where they have a loss, like somebody in their family is terminally ill and they're getting ready to go through a major life change. Or maybe they're going through their own breakup, or they're having a problem with a teenage child. Something in their life is going on that's got them off kilter. It's got them off their normal. And they have to figure out, number one, how do I not take all of the blame and the guilt for that? And then number two, how do I establish whatever that new normal is going to be? Even where there's a point where they probably don't know what that is. So it's kind of like a multi-step process. And then how do they figure out how to move forward and not carry all the baggage? Everybody has baggage. Come on. But how do you not carry that forward and make it, instead you use those experiences as a positive instead of a negative? And I think that's really what you're about, is you're taking these people that obviously follow your movement. So you're taking these people who are, they're just like grasping, looking for that answer, and you're giving them a voice and you're giving them a way to get out there. Am I kind of on the right track?
You are exactly on the right track. And it's again, the basis of my book, and such a good question, because no matter what you're going through, and this is what I talk about when I do interviews and in my book, is we all have struggles, whether it be career, health, relationships, what have it, you know. And what my mission is to help people to move from those struggles, like you said, into our strengths. And how do we do that? It's a long like step process. It's not something that happens overnight. But once you work through these steps and really work on discovering who you are after something traumatic, again, traumatic trauma can be a range of things. Trauma can be divorce. Trauma can be a health crisis. Trauma can be a breakup. You know, anytime you go through something like that, a crisis, something that makes you feel uncomfortable, that really changes part of your life, you have to go through this step, which is the first step in my book of rediscovering who you are. And really doing that deep dive into what is my life going to look like now? And that is the scariest step to do. I tell people that the steps that I talk about in my book are ones that I actually went through when I was going through my own trauma work. My book was written in 5 months, started like literally a couple weeks after I walked away from my ex-husband. And so that book literally is my saving grace. And it is raw. It is real. It is just my heart on paper. And so those steps that I went through, I actually did to move from not feeling like I was ever good enough to being enough and literally living in my strength. So it's a difficult process, but it is completely worth it. It's scary, but let me tell you, when you do that process and you rediscover who you are, you rediscover your values and what you stand for, the world, like everything is possible. Like it looks like it's not as scary anymore because you're able to think what I like to say outside of the box and imagine different things and really get back on track, emotionally and, you know, body, mind, and soul is what I like to say.
So was there a point in time where it was like a switch flipped? Because obviously you're very vulnerable. And the thing we've, you know, being in the space, what you learn is that there's a lot of people, and you do a lot of speaking. There's a lot of people who are kind of on that stage. And if you get a visual, you're elevated already. You're above the crowd. You're talking down, not always, but in a lot of instances, you're talking down and you automatically have that presence. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a lot of people who are, you know, quote unquote influencers or, you know, on that level, they're motivational, they're inspirational, but what they don't do a very good job of is they don't do a good job of connecting the dots and basically say, okay, I was here and then I went through A, B, C, D, and eventually ended up at Z, which got me on this stage. And the cool thing about that is if I'm sitting in the audience, I have the ability to sit there and picture myself being at a level. I've always had that. And I think that's an inner confidence that I have. But as I talk with other people, some have it, some don't. You talk about like an elite athlete, they have that they can see themselves at, you know, being at an advanced level. It's almost like they won't quit. They won't accept something less. But there's a lot of people that you talk to in a week, a month, a year that really can't do that. So you have to almost lay those steps out for them. And I feel like being vulnerable gives you the opportunity to connect and they go, oh my gosh, it's like I'm feeling that same thing. And that's what's so neat about it. And that's probably a big part of the reason you've had such a pull and been able to connect with so many people is that vulnerability. But that's the scary part. So the question is, was there like a switch that went off when you said, okay, it's my turn to tell my story and it's really not about me, it's about everybody else?
So that's kind of, I love this question. And actually no one has asked me this question. And this is something that I've struggled with, to be honest with you, because let me go to the first part of the question was the point. And I think honestly, like I had started talking about a little bit about kind of my story, even on your show, mm-hmm. A year ago, but it wasn't until I hit enter on Amazon. I'll never forget that moment. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning because I live here in California. And I was sitting there and I was like, oh crap. Like that is where it hit me. Like everyone that reads my book is going to know my story because I had hidden behind that mask of I have everything, like everything's good, you know? And it was at that moment where I was like, this is my story. God gave me this story for a reason and I have to use it to give back. I've always been very vulnerable and authentic, you know, to a degree. So for me to do this on like, interviews and stuff was not that difficult. But when it came out of my book, I didn't even think about it because I was like, oh, wait, I'm a therapist. Like, my patients are going to read it. I was kind of a mess. But honestly, it was the best thing that ever happened to me because I totally agree with you. I've sat in so many conferences and stages and things like that where people, speakers, are so scared to be vulnerable. And you lose your audience at that time because what people want is real. What people want to hear is real people who, especially for me, like being a therapist for 15 years, my patients, my clients, my audience, whatever, they want to hear that I'm real and that I've struggled and that I know what trauma is and all of this stuff. So definitely pressing enter for my book was the biggest thing, I think. And just every time I talk, you know, like just the people that have reached out and when I'm doing speaking engagements, I just did International Summit on Abuse, Trauma, and Violence last week. And I had a line of like 15, 20 people that were waiting to talk to me afterwards. And a couple of them were crying and just saying like, thank you so much for sharing your story. And for kind of, like you said, connecting the dots of like, this is where you were. And you also provided like the education and the value of narcissistic abuse and all of that stuff. And then this is where you are today. But this is what I gotta say at the beginning is I struggle with this because some people, different entrepreneurs and being in the speaking world say you talk too much about your story. And then other people, like the audience members, you know, and like the people that come up to me afterwards say, thank you so much for sharing your story. So that has been kind of, I think, the biggest struggle as a speaker is how much do I focus on that and how much do I do more like training and education? But for me, it's my story. And that's what draws the right people to me and which gives me, you know, the confidence and courage to continue to do what I'm doing.
And you know, being completely upfront, when I first started being interviewed, it was almost weird for me to go on, you know, somebody else's platform.
Yeah.
And you know, I've been on interviews where the interview is basically tell your story. And that's it. And they don't say another word and you talk. And it's almost like I'm on my own show. And but that's really what people want to hear is they want to hear the story. Because your story is it's like your virtual resume or whatever you want to call that. And it gives you the opportunity, if you think of like the sift and sort that happens in hiring and, you know, on the corporate side these days, or even in the entrepreneur space in a small business where there's lots and lots of applications or resumes coming in and somebody's just looking for a keyword. Those people are living almost like a fallacy where they're embellishing whatever they are in order to get noticed, and it's not authentic. When you have the opportunity to go out and connect with people, you have the opportunity to just be you and either people like you or they don't like you. And that's the growth is saying, hey, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be vulnerable. And there are going to be people that are going to absolutely hate what I say. And it's probably going to be people that are really, really close to me and that I really, really thought had my back. And they're going to be the people that end up just, they completely disagree with what you're doing. And it can be for a multitude of reasons. But one of the reasons is because they could never visualize themselves doing that.
Exactly.
But they'll never admit that. Yeah. And that's why if you listen to some of the people who have really gotten to that big stage, if you go back and if somebody really, really dives deep in an interview with them, a lot of them started off as kind of like that hater and it was a personal growth and it could be that they were bullied as a kid or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And something happened and they realized that they grew up. And then some people never grow up. So they stay like that forever. So it's interesting because all of the experiences that we go through in life, which are, you know, traumatic at whatever level you're at, really is what makes you who you are. And I think that's the struggle is so many people right now are just, they're hurting for money and they're worried about if they lead with their story, they're never going to get to the money. And that's another fear that people go through. But you're obviously at this point in time, your story is what's driving the revenue. So why would you stop telling it?
And to be honest,
when you're making money, I mean, it's awesome.
Right. And well, I have to say a couple things. I don't make any money from the movement. That's okay. Cause that's not what I wanted from the movement. But honestly, for your listeners, I had to file for bankruptcy 2 years ago because of my ex-husband. I was making six figures as a, you know, full-time mental health therapist in a hospital. And then my whole life fell apart. And I was like, okay. And I actually had lost my job at the hospital because I did a Facebook Live on Whole Food Nutrition. That's a whole nother story. Talk about trauma. Literally within 3 months, I lost my job and walked away from my ex-husband. And I was like, okay, what am I going to do? And I had started doing the steps. And that's when I was able to visualize this life of me owning my own life and owning my own schedule. And so now I have a private practice where I sit on a computer and do video therapy, and it's amazing. And I just sit in my pajamas and, you know, do therapy. And so that's my biggest source of income. But that is one of the things, is because 2 years ago, I had nothing. I lost everything, including money. And I'm 40 years old. And I'm like, well, yeah, I could go back and get a full-time job, but that's not living my passion and my purpose. And so having that struggle is really real. And, you know, what you said earlier, it really kind of struck a chord with me because I've really not talked about this at all. You've got really good questions, by the way, and like really good insight, is the people that are going to kind of hate on you. And there's times where, you know, I get all these like reactions on Facebook posts, or, you know, like I talk about this amazing opportunity to be at this speaking event or blah, blah, blah. And so many of the people that are close to me, they don't say anything. They don't like the post. They don't this, they don't that. They don't ask about, you know, how things are going with me, like when we talk. And that's something I had to get over, because I was like, well, what am I doing wrong? Or like, do they think that I'm like, you know, just using my whatever to like get more attention or this and that? And so, but I've also had it with other entrepreneurs. There's been a couple people that have literally even made posts about what I'm doing. I'm not saying my name, but, you know, just kind of like not mocking the movement, but just kind of using it as a way to like say, well, anyway, I'm not going to go into it. But yes, there's haters in this world. And if I wouldn't have gone through this work to believe that I was enough, honestly, if I would have had this mediocre level of confidence, and all of this stuff was happening in the last year with what people were thinking and saying and this and that, I definitely probably would have quit. But I have to use everything that I've learned as a therapist to continue to move on and share my story.
And there's so much in that, because the one thing, and I find myself telling, gosh, I told my 10-year-old this yesterday, because we were having a moment and she got upset. And I said, the reason you get upset is because you care. And people that are in this space care. Mm-hmm. They generally, you can't fake that. And maybe that's why my questions are pointed, because you, when you care, you get, you're emotionally plugged into what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And you know, you're juiced up about it. And you, people, you can't hide that. But when you care, it's upsetting, like it or not, when somebody doesn't get it,
right,
or doesn't respect it, or just flat out just says it's, you know, it's stupid or whatever word they want to use, or like you said, mocks it. So if you care, and that's the growth thing, is it really is, it's personal and it's business, and it's all kind of thrown together. And it's like, you know, I was just going through last week and just revisiting my avatar and really, really zeroing in on exactly who that is. And it was a really deep dive brain thinking exercise that I go through periodically. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, you realize that your messaging is to that person. And most of these people that are not agreeing with what you say, they're not that person. They're not your ideal person. They're like, they're a byproduct or whatever. And some of those people may eventually become that person. They just need a little bit more time to get into the other stages of that funnel and develop those trust factors. And what develops that is the consistent showing up day in and day out. And people see you on social media. I see you all the time. it looks like you don't have a bad day. That's not the reality, though. And that's the challenge.
My post from 2 days ago.
I missed that one, I guess.
Oh my gosh. There was usually I am so not the one that gets a lot of reactions on my Facebook posts. And that's something that I struggle with, is the fact that I don't feel confident on social media. Mm-hmm. But I did this post a couple days ago when I was speaking at the international summit, because of something that I received from my ex-husband the night before and the morning that I was literally walking out the door, and I fell apart. And I wrote this on Facebook, and it got 185 but then 85 comments. So I appreciate you saying that. And I don't want to look like I have it all together at all, because I'm a mess. I mean, I'm a human mess at times. So it's I try to be vulnerable, but it is hard. It is hard sometimes on social media.
Well, that's the thing. And I guess I kind of said that for a reason. So I'm glad the conversation went the way it did, because I actually did an episode on it recently about the perception, the perfect life perception of social media. And, you know, in general, you want to look good. I mean, when you go out the door, you fix your hair, you look in the mirror, you do those kind of things. So from an outside perception, which I would call the storefront, is you want to look good. And then it's the back of house is where the mess happens.
Yeah.
So what I find myself doing is I try to, if I'm having a moment, I don't always do it immediately. Sometimes I want to sleep on it but I do definitely try to, in my messaging, try to put stuff out there and even sometimes it's just a question, and you don't even have to talk directly about yourself. You can talk in third person. You can do it however you're comfortable doing it, but just getting that out there and letting people know it's not perfect. Because I also wanted to double back and talk about the finances, because that's the other thing that, you know, and I might've alluded that, you know, you're making all this money or whatever. The reality is entrepreneurship is a struggle for most entrepreneurs. And some of the people that are on social media telling you that they're making a lot of money, that doesn't mean they're making a lot of money every day. That might mean they made a lot of money last week or last month. And they're, if you think of politically about how you play with numbers, the same thing happens in the entrepreneur space. So I always like to just say that success is a function of whatever you define it as.
Exactly.
And that's going back to that stage about connecting the dots. Is it's the awesome thing about the entrepreneurship is that there is no true cap. It's self-induced in a lot of ways, because people, you know, they're small-minded and things like that, or they bottleneck their own business. But you have the ability to continue to grow and grow and grow and scale. And that's the allure to me about the entrepreneurship, because you've gone through a life change where things are different. So now you have to be able to live whatever that new normal is differently. So in the event that you had a job that was getting you through the old normal and then everything changed, well, that job might not serve you anymore because it might not do what it needs to. You're basically trapped. Whereas an entrepreneur, I feel like you have the ability to double down on something or add another income stream or scale one. And that's, to me, the it's daunting, but it's why, in a couple of years, you've completely transformed yourself because you've gotten into that space. But the big but is that's not for everybody. So I always test my clients on the front end. I've had clients that have come to me and we've gone through a month. And at the end of that month, you know what they've done? They've decided, hey, I want to keep my job. And I say, well, then I've done my job because I have stopped you from making a mistake. So when you hear us talk and all, it doesn't mean you have to jump off this bridge and go, you know, speak on stage all over the place. All we're really trying to do is connect with people at your level. And that's what's cool about your movement. That's why I like the word I in there, because I feel like that's such a powerful word. Because it's a bit about, you know, it's just, you can be whatever I want to be. And that's what's really cool.
And I'm so glad that you talked about this, because I remember when I became an entrepreneur, I would see, and I still see people's posts, but now I'm like, I know you. I know you're not making this much money.
No, you're calling BS, right?
Yeah. And it's like, I remember like when I became an entrepreneur and I got into the speaking world and all of that stuff, and I would see these people's posts and I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, how did they do that? And then I learned that that's not true. And it frustrates me because of the authenticity and the integrity, and people will pay them thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, but there's no integrity, authenticity about what they're doing because they're lying basically or fibbing on Facebook to get people to come to them. And for me, I never want to make it look like I have it all together because I want the people that come to me to know that I am not A, just taking them for their money, and B, that I really want them to make these changes to truly believe that they're enough. And it's so crazy because I thought about, should I just go back and get a full-time job? And then there's more times than not where I'm like, oh, I'm so glad, because the job that I had does not fit me anymore. Just like you said, it doesn't fit my lifestyle. It doesn't fit my story. It doesn't fit anything. And so it is difficult. And the multiple streams of income, I have a network marketing business that I actually started like like 8 years ago. And that was kind of what gave me my taste into entrepreneurship, because I was doing that while I had full time, you know, and I've got my private practice and contract work and all of this stuff. So yes, multiple streams of income and, you know, affiliation marketing and like all of this stuff, stuff that I think that new entrepreneurs don't realize when they first start, because I didn't know, and I'm still learning about different opportunities coming in. I'm actually in the process of, I'm going to be changing the movement into a nonprofit because I was not because of the money, but I want to like brand it so no one can steal the idea, because someone has tried to do that already. But
I'm sure.
but I didn't know the opportunities that are even in nonprofits. So it's a constant learning. But I love what you do, where you like work with people and help them figure out if this is what they want, because you don't want to get too deep in financially with like paying coaches and doing all of this stuff and then realize 5 years down the road that this isn't working.
Yeah. And it's hard because it's like when you're in Vegas on the craps table and it's up and down, and you know, sometimes it's hot and sometimes it's really cold. And that the challenge, I actually talked about this on an interview. I was being interviewed yesterday. We talked about maintaining that kind of like that even keel. When you have a really good day, you don't want to get too excited about it. And when you have a really bad day, you don't want to get too upset. How do you, over time, and I'm going to flip this question back to you because I had to answer it yesterday. How, over time, do you manage to maintain that consistent, I'm going to show up every day, I'm going to put my game face on, even on the bad days, I'm still going to do what I need to do, when, like you said, you may be a mess behind the scenes? But how do you manage to do that? What systems, what processes do you put in place in order to make that happen?
Believing that I am enough, honestly, because there's day, and the movement, honestly, because the movement is all about visual coping skills. So there's days where I get up and I don't feel like I'm enough and I don't feel like I can do this. And then there's the cards that I use in the movement. You know, I've got one at my kitchen table, I've got one in my car, I've got one in my purse. I mean, they're all over the place. And I read what I wrote on the back of why I am enough. And that's what I use to say, that's what gets me motivated. It's kind of like one of those motivational videos where you're like jumping around in your living room, like, I got this, right? For me, it's reading like what I wrote on the back of the cards and to remind myself, like, I'm not doing this for me. There's people out there that need to hear my story. There's people out there that, you know, I need to and want to connect with so that I can help them. It's not about me. It's about the people that I want to help. And so for me, that is probably my number one thing, to keep me on course and this and that, but also because I'm really OCD and my to-do list each day, if it's not done, I struggle with that. So I think my to-do list and what's in my calendar also keeps me motivated and on track. But I do a lot of self-care. On the weekends, I do not work. I don't do calls. I don't do interviews. And it's just my time. You know, Saturdays and Sundays is my time because I need that time to recharge, refocus, just kind of, you know, I see 35 to 40 patients a week. That's a lot.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so
a tremendous amount.
Yeah. And there's times where I'm emotionally drained. And so I need that self-care and that time for me to go do what I want. And then it gets me back focused on the week and getting back to helping people.
That's funny because I remember the first time I laid out one of my mentors talks about the napkin. And he says, if you can sit down like at a restaurant, two of you sitting at a table and pull out a napkin, if you can put your business plan down on a napkin, then you've got a simplified business that you can work with. If you can't, then you need to go back and kind of start over because people go so many different directions. They can't maintain it. And I remember sitting down and doing that. And I was laying out my one-on-one coaching clients and I started adding the hours up. And so, yeah, what you're doing, that's an immense task. So I can see why you're drained. Plus it's emotional.
It is emotional. And, you know, doing this for 15 years, I've learned the skills and I have my own coping skills to not take it home with me. But yeah, I mean, in the back of my mind, even subconsciously, I'm thinking about certain patients or I'm thinking about my business. But I just have to, and it's taken me a lot of years to learn how to just put that behind me and not like obsess about it. But I just know I've seen it. I have fallen apart during the week if I haven't taken that time for myself. So the movement literally and my book and all of that and my story honestly is what keeps me going. That gets me up.
So when you do your to-do list, I don't want to go too far off tangent, but one thing that I tend to struggle with is sometimes I'll put too much on the list. And then when I find myself getting overwhelmed, what will happen is that to-do list looks much bigger than it is, even mm-hmm. though it hasn't changed. It's just a perception. So what I have done over time is I got to kind of beat myself up. I try to figure my week out on Sundays. And
what I do. I call it schedule Sundays.
it makes sense. It doesn't always work, but that's always like my goal. That's like my Sunday goal is to do that. But I have to really be careful that I don't overschedule my weeks. Mm-hmm. Have you figured out a good control? Like how far out do you schedule? Because a lot of people schedule way, way out in detail and then it's just frustrating because it all breaks down. I'm not advocating to do that, but to look at the big picture, I think is important and not just like everything's got to be done tomorrow.
Yeah. So that's a really good question because that's actually one of the things that I talk about in my book. This is step four mm-hmm. of strength, creating your strength plan. So it's the time management piece. And I love schedule Sundays. I meal prep. And then schedule my week. And if I do both of those things, I get pizza.
Which is the reward end of it, which is important, right?
It is so important because everyone that knows me knows that my pizza night is Sunday.
I know. I know that just from seeing it all the time. And we're on two different coasts.
Yeah. I love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. But anyway, so that's really important. And for me, I have this amazing planner. It's literally right next to me. It goes everywhere with me and it's color-coded with erasable pens because things happen. Yes, there's things that are scheduled in advance, like my patients and interviews and speaking engagements. But the one thing that I talk about is if you can see it visually, I always tell people to get like a 30-minute planner because if you can see it visually, that to-do list doesn't look so big because you're like on Sundays, I open my planner and I'm like, oh, I have 30 minutes right here. I can do this. Or I have an hour here. I'm going to do some self-care, right? So if you use like your phone, a lot of the phones, like at least my calendar doesn't have like the time increments. And so when I would look at my phone, I would see, oh, 8 o'clock this, 10 o'clock this, 11, you know, without seeing those little breaks in between there. And then my mind would be like, oh my gosh, I have so much to do. So really, for me and a lot of my patients, when we create the strength plan is getting this type of planner and putting these things in. And then if you have, if it's all full, like the whole week where you don't have breaks for eating or yourself or anything like that, then that's when you know that it's too much. And yeah, again, prioritizing for sure.
Yeah. And with me, I actually block time to like take the kids to school and stuff, because to me, it's a real activity that it's something I have to do. So I feel like looking at it just means I can't schedule there. So I agree 100% with the visual. I actually did a poll recently and asked people how they planned out their day. It was about 90%+ that came back and said that they did it pen and paper. So people are
really?
and that could be a testament, because my sweet spot is like 35 to 45. That's kind of the age range.
Yeah.
So they're not quite like 20 years old where everything is electronic, but a lot of people have flirted with all these different ideas. I had one client that was even using a bullet journal that was really, really detailed. Like you were talking about with the different colors and everything. And that was like the Bible. Like nobody touched it, you know, and it was very, very,
oh yeah, this thing goes,
yeah,
everywhere.
That's how hers was. But it seems like people are trying all these apps and they're going back to, hey, it's really about, it doesn't matter what app you're using, it's about being able to visualize it. And if you can't visualize it, you can't pick it apart, it doesn't make sense. And the phone takes away some of the basics. The technology does the work for you, but it doesn't allow you to function in a normal way that you would think through the processes. So
I totally agree with that, because I think in our generation per se, you know, we didn't have phones back then. And so everything was in a planner. And I think having your calendar on your phone, there's just too many ways to have distractions, right? So you could be trying to plan something or change. I don't know. I just think that the phone is just a distraction. The one thing I always tell people is we have so many things that we have to do every single day. And when you come to your strength plan, that's what I call it, you put in all the things you have to do first. So like you said, you take your kids to school. Mm-hmm. So, you know, any work you have to do, any like eating, extracurricular activities for kids or whatever. And then I always say, those are all the things you have to do. And then, you know, work tasks and things like that. But you have to, which is, I'm like, that's what you have to have something in your day that you want to do, because that changes the mediocrity of the mundane day, right? So it's having whatever that is, if it's going to the gym, if it's going for a walk, if it's going to coffee with a friend, every single day you should have like something that you want to do in your schedule.
And that's the paradigm shift, because when people get overwhelmed, and it doesn't matter how many people you talk to, they went through a series in their life or a season in their life where they did not do that. And they sacrificed everything in order to try to solve a problem. And I go back to when I was doing the construction, we would do these jobs and we would accelerate a schedule. And we did work in-house with iron workers. So we were setting steel and stuff like that. So you take 40 or 50 guys, put them on a big job. I'm thinking of one in specific that was like 400,000 square feet. We bring these guys in and we put them on 7 days a week. And I started looking at the numbers because that was one of the pieces I was managing. I said, wait a minute, they're working 7 days a week and they're setting the same amount of pieces of iron as when they were working 5 tens, because they hit a point where they had maxed out, they had peaked, and now everything they did was done at a slower pace. Mm-hmm. That's what happens when you don't take that time, is you never get out of that busyness. So I find personally that when I take the time to do something like that, like the gym or take the boat out or whatever that is, the rest of my day goes smoother and I actually need to work less hours in order to accomplish the same amount. Yeah. So you're 100% right. But that's a paradigm shift that a lot of people do, is they cut out the wrong thing. So instead of cutting out like, hey, something that I can delegate cheaply and easily, they cut out the thing that really makes them be able to operate at the level they need to in order to provide for not only their business, but also for their family as well.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah, so that's huge. That's a great place to end, because I think we really that brought it full. That was probably the most powerful piece of the whole episode was that.
Yeah.
That was
cool. Love it.
So How do my listeners get a hold of you? I'm sure they're going to want to tap into the movement, and I'll put all this in the show notes.
Definitely. Just to share about the movement, I'm super excited. I launched 6 months ago, and we just hit our 25th state and our 11th country. So what does that mean by that is that people can go to my website and order the movement cards. You get 5 of them for free, and they're visual coping skills. So on the back, it has the word because with a couple lines, and I tell people to write why you believe that you're enough. And so people have organically, which is awesome. It's not that I have sent the cards to people that I know. People have organically heard about the movement and gone onto the website and got their cards. So that's really exciting. I'm trying to hit, you know, all 50 countries by the end of October, or all 50 states. But it's just amazing. Like Egypt, I sent cards to Egypt and the Philippines and Sweden. It's just, it's amazing. So I'm super excited about it. So if people go to my website, meganfenyo.com, it's just my name, they can check out the I Am Enough movement. People do selfies and send them to me. I literally went with my video guy on the beach here. I live in San Diego, and went up to people randomly on video with my little microphone and my I'm Enough shirt, and interviewed random strangers about what it means to be enough. It was like the most powerful couple hours of ever. It was so awesome. And so you can see those on there, and yeah, everything is on my website. And then, I'll be launching I Am Enough TV as well coming up here in a couple weeks. So super excited about that.
That's incredible. And I did see you out there on the beach doing that. I thought that was really
cool. You did? Yeah.
I caught that. Yeah, that was
it. It was nerve-wracking, honestly, because it's like walking up to someone. It's not like you're a news crew, like, you know, but so I focused a lot on the younger people. There's a couple older people that did the videos, but for my first time, it was easier because, you know, the younger people are like, oh yeah, I'll be on camera. Like, cool. Mm-hmm. But it was really fun. So there's about 10 interviews, and I'm going to be doing it again in a couple, well, hopefully like next month again. But all of those interviews will be used at the beginning of the I Am Enough TV show. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah. I had a friend a couple years ago that was in San Francisco and kind of went out on the streets with a camera and a mic and was pleasantly surprised by the warm reception of people.
Yeah.
And the comfort, which is, it's a testament to how people have changed.
Yeah.
From what they used to be with that. Definitely. So, the other thing is, I mentioned briefly at the outset, go ahead, hop on my website, the10factor.com, and download your copy of the personal assessment, because it's in my mind, it's a necessary part of the journey to figure out where you are right now and identify with that in order to have growth. So go ahead, take advantage of that. And then if you're tuning in today for the first time on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, wherever you take in your podcast, go ahead, take a moment, subscribe. Don't miss another episode with great guests like Megan. And also go to the10factor.com directly, and you can tune in there as well. Other than that, I'll put the show notes out. I'll try to capture some of the highlights of the episode, make sure all the backlinks are in there and stuff, so you can get a hold of Megan and get started on the movement yourself. Do me a favor, listeners, try to go out there and impact somebody this week. Until next time, Tim Michael, The 10 Factor, signing off.